What's the 411?
You tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome all students from Rickard's IB program, Markema Peterson.
Hello.
Glad to have you. She's a senior at Rickard's, and she plans to attend UF in marketing. Amanda Buya, she's also a senior. She plans to major in communication and psychology. She's not real sure where she's going to go.
Hi.
Adam Wyman, probably go to FSU or TCC. He's into music and visual arts and psychology.
That's me.
Kevin Ramirez, always nice to have him back. Kevin plans to go to University of Florida. He's going to be an electrical engineer and probably have a double major in some language, maybe French.
Hey there.
Krudy Patel. Krudy is a senior, and she's into philosophy and theology and math.
Hi.
Well, glad to have all of you. Look forward to talking with you this hour to get your take on what torture is. Torture is any act by which severe pain, whether physical or psychological, is intentionally inflicted on a person as a means of intimidation, a deterrent, revenge, a punishment, or as a method for extraction of information or confessions. Many Americans and the majority of people in Britain, France, South Korea say torturing terrorism suspects is justified. 61% of those surveyed in the United States agree that torture is justified on rare occasions. The U.S. has drawn criticism from human rights groups and many governments for its treatment of terror suspect. Although top officials and Presidents Bush and Obama have said the U.S. does not torture, some suspects in American custody allege they were victims of severe mistreatment. This hour, we're going to look at torture and what it is. When I say torture, what does that mean to you? Whomever. Go ahead. Doesn't matter.
When I think of the word torture, I think of hurting someone to a capacity where it's unbearable anymore, to a point where they just can't take it anymore, and to the point where they break down and you become officially their authority figure in their life.
Okay. Others?
I just think of Guantanamo Bay, really, when mm-hmm. I think of torture, because that's where they allegedly all that stuff goes on.
Well, not only Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, yeah, no, a lot more places. But that's
yeah,
one you
But
always
that's
hear
one
about.
You hear about. You're right. What about the rest of you? I mean, Kevin, where do you sit on this?
Well, definitely the first thing I think of is waterboarding, because there was so much controversy about that. I mean, it's the first torture technique that I think of, like, on the spot when I hear the word. And I just think, like, the first word I think of, though, is unjust.
Mm-hmm. That characterizes it right there.
Yes, ma'am.
Amanda.
Well, I think torture, just like Kevin, can be synonymous with unjust or treachery, which is what I think of when thinking of torture, somebody doing wrong deeds to another person or inflicting intentional harm on somebody. But I also think that torture is a subjective word, and it has subjective meaning behind it. So I can only give my personal opinion on what I think is torturous, then what somebody else might think might not be the same.
That's true. Krudy.
I agree with Amanda. I do believe that it's subjective, and I do agree with the definition that is an intentional harm, but depending on the circumstances, it could be justifiable.
Okay. All right. Let's imagine a biological warfare. And we know that this warfare may be released on American cities simultaneously. Millions of people will die. We've captured the terrorist, and he knows the specifications of the release of this biological chemical agent. He's not talking. What do we do? Is torture justified? No. IB students are not talking.
It's just that's hard to justify morally. It's pragmatic to torture him, to get information out of him. But there's too many ethical implications for someone who's not in that seat right now to be able to say that it is justified. I personally don't think it's justified based on the moral implications, because this is another human being. I'm sure he's committed atrocious crimes, but it is another human being of equal, you know, stature and all that we're inflicting this harm upon, when it's not, you know, our place to do that.
Okay. All right. I want to get all of your feelings on it, okay? And I'll just go around the table. Adam.
I don't think we should either, because solving violence with violence gets nowhere. And Gandhi said that an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind, and he knew what he was doing, so.
Okay.
Well, I just want to clarify that this person that we would intentionally torture knows that this biological warfare would kill millions of people. Well, in that case, I think that it is justified for us to torture that person. Only saying this because I think that it would be the greatest good for the greatest number, because it would help millions of other people. And also, I think it does have ethical implications because of my own personal morals, but that might not be applicative to that of everybody else's. But in this case, I think that torture would be necessary.
Okay. All right.
Okay, I would agree with Amanda. I would have a utilitarian outlook on this whole situation, saying that this terrorist, he knows that the information that he has, he's not like revealing it to the public, and this could kill millions of people. I think that torture would be justified, but not to the point where it degrades the terrorist as a human himself. Like certain torture techniques shouldn't be utilized on him that could degrade him as a human. Like, we still have to keep in mind that this is also a human being. Like Kevin said, he's a human being, but he's doing unhumanly acts. He's trying to kill millions of people. So we also have to take that into consideration in trying to justify if this is right or not.
And you all have raised some good points, and we'll come back to them. Where do you sit, Crudy?
I don't think it matters the number of people. If this person is intending to harm even another person, then, well, not to say harm, to say take another person's life, then I feel that it is just to torture him to an extent to extract that information.
Okay. So let me just phrase this again and get a good... three of you are saying that torture is justified. Okay. To all of you, I ask, are there circumstances... Our situations, even those of you who do not agree with it, under which you think torture would be justified? And I'll start with you two, because I know you all were kind of like, I don't agree with it, which is cool. I mean, but, you know, I'm just wondering, as we look at torture and we think it's all this heinous act and it's unjustified and it's inhuman, are there any circumstances where it would be justified?
You'd have to think about it. Justified in what sense? Morally justified, or just justified by your own like emotional appeal? Like, will this make you feel better, or is it going to be for the greater good?
Well, with morals, that's just as debatable too, because what you say is moral, I may say is immoral. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of like, I don't know if I want to deal with that whole morally thing. You know what I mean? Because it's you know, a slippery slope there.
Very subjective.
yeah. But I'm just thinking, are there any situations that you would say, oh, yeah, well, he needed to be tortured? Or, of course, now the other side of it is, we must remember, those who study torture, those pundits say that the information we get from torture is not always reliable. Because if somebody is inflicting pain upon you, whatever it is, whether it's psychological or physical, at a certain point, you may just say whatever you need to say to have that pain stop. So, anyhow, I'm throwing the question out there.
I just think there are other ways of coercion that don't involve hurting anybody. I mean, money is meaningless when you compare that to human life, so you can always buy them off. I mean, there's so many other ways to go about the situation than just bluntly harming one. That's sort of a really narrow way to...
Okay, sure. Go right ahead.
Okay, in response to that statement, I want to say, what is the other way in order... What is the other way? Like, they're not... They don't want money. They don't want... They just want power. They want to kill people. other people. So what is the other way? They don't want anything else. They want to kill other people for their own emotional, like, their own emotional needs. So
all right, ideological, beliefs. So, yeah, I was going to ask them exactly that. What other options would you use? Because in these situations where we're talking about torture, where there's war, money doesn't matter at all. Money is insignificant.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you have other ways that you think? And you can think about it and we can come back to it.
I'm going to have to brainstorm on that.
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah.
Well, even though I was for torture, just playing devil's advocate, I think that maybe Kevin and Adam are thinking that to what extent can we torture somebody? To what extent can we use another human for, a means to an end or for instrumental reasons? When does it stop? Mm-hmm. And personally, I don't really know when it does stop because you're also taking on that facade of you inflicting pain on somebody else, knowing that maybe not to the same extent that they inflicted pain on somebody else, but you're still doing the same task, maybe not to the same development or level of, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Could I get clarification on that? Are you saying that it changes a person?
I don't know if it changes a person because I haven't tortured somebody before. But I think that when somebody tortures somebody, it definitely changes their cognitive state.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Also, they're using violence, and they're just sort of sinking down to the same level. If the person's being tortured to stop some violent technique in that scenario,
mm-hmm.
So they're sort of sinking down to the same level as the people for a different cause.
Okay, I'll come back to that. Kevin, you had something you wanted to say.
I was going
to
question how effective it can be if a person is so inclined to commit such atrocities based on their ideology.
Mm-hmm.
What's telling us that they're going to say anything if we torture them? I mean, even if they do reach the breaking point, like you said, they could just lie about it, give false information that we believe to be true and would probably cause something, worse to happen. So in effect, they really could just make things worse by being tortured.
Okay. Well, let me throw this out. What about all is fair in love and war? If you're at war, does anything and everything go? I mean, don't we owe it to our enlisted folks to go to any means that we possibly can to support them and to defend our country and the peoples of our country? Markina.
I think, especially in America, we have this sense of nationalism. Like, we are proud to be Americans. And this is why, I think it was 61% you said, agreed? Mm-hmm. This is why the percent is so high, the 61%, mm-hmm. because of this, like, heightened sense of nationalism that we have. Like, around town, you always see we support our troops and other things. And we feel as though that we have to defend our country. Not only our country, but other countries also.
Yeah, we're the police of the world.
Yeah. But, like, when it comes to, I believe, and like the torture thing, but when it comes to what types is the difference between the physical or the psychological? So I'm more on the psychological kind instead of the physical aspect of torture. So
okay, all right, comments.
I feel like maybe cognitive torture is worse in a way because physical pain fades away with time, but sometimes mental pain can stay with the person for the rest of their life.
So what does that mean? Which one is? Would you sign up for one or the
Preferably
other?
Probably neither.
Okay.
Well, in response to all's fair in love and war, I learned the hard way. Nothing's fair in love. I don't know much about war, but I would say that no, not all is fair in war. I mean, we already have, certain rules against that. Chemical warfare is a big no-no. Mm-hmm. Now, with what's going on in Syria, there's a huge controversy over that. So, no, not everything is fair. There are, laws set against certain things. Things would be hard to combat, thereby giving an unjust advantage to one side or the other. And it should be your resources against theirs, except mm-hmm. for these, These we're putting off to the side, like chemicals and biological weapons and all that.
Yeah, but see, they're saying, hey, when we're in war, we're at war. And anything and everything goes. I mean, if you're at war, does it all go?
I don't think.
Amanda, you look like.
I don't think it all goes. I think if, you know, all is fair in love and war, that a lot more things would happen than they are now. I think there's some sort of inherent or innate laws that we have when going to war with other nations, such as with the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan. I think a lot more things would have happened over here if all was fair in love and war, that we would have seen a lot more troops come over here than us just going over there. And maybe they didn't have, you know, as many mobilities to come over here. That's why we, I guess, had the upper hand in that ability. But I definitely agree with Kevin that
Okay. Well, you all hold your thoughts. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This hour, we are exploring torture. Joining me at the roundtable, I welcome again Kruti Patel, Kevin Ramirez, Adam Wyman, Amanda Bouya, and Markema Peterson. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Before we went on break, we were still talking about the torture, and we mentioned that 61% of Americans polled agreed that torture is justified in rare occasions. What do you consider, what would you consider the rare occasion where it is justified? Because we were just talking about that right before, yeah. So what would you consider, Kruti?
I think the rare occasion would be terrorist attacks. Like, I guess, like, an everyday basis, we have crimes that occur. And we don't, I mean, they might be, like, national crimes, but we don't inflict torture upon a person. But when it's, like, terrorist attacks, then some of us deem it justifiable to inflict torture.
Okay, so you're saying terrorist attacks. Okay, any other, yeah.
I would say, like, what Kruti said, but we kind of, like push to the side when it's just one or two people that's getting hurt. But when it's a national threat to everyone in the country, then I think that's a rare occasion where we use torture. Like, torture, the subject of torture comes up more often, since it's not just one or two people, but your own life could be at stake. That's when torture really comes into play.
I would definitely agree with that. I think that it is, every human life is important, and we shouldn't only just focus on thousands of people, but also on the individual. But we as human beings tend to feel more connected to a story when it's affecting tens of thousands of people. So I think that's when most people would say it's justified, such as, you know, terrorism or mass genocides or other things of that nature.
Okay.
I can't see a justifiable circumstance.
Kevin, you look like you're thinking.
I don't want to sound wishy-washy. It's just
but
With my beliefs, I don't believe there is a justifiable reason for torture either. Okay. There's got to be an alternative. It's just not right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Can you provide any alternatives? I mean, what would be a viable alternative?
Well, I mean, there's always negotiations. I know we don't negotiate with terrorists.
Okay.
But there has to be a way to be able to talk to another human being out of something like that.
Yeah. And if you can't talk them out or convince them otherwise, then, you know, causing them pain probably isn't going to do anything to change that either.
Okay. So. All right. Well, now let's look at torture from another perspective. What about force feeding? Okay. You know, the detainees at Guantanamo Bay were on a hunger strike. There were prisoners in California that went on hunger strike, protesting the conditions of solitary confinement, and saying that solitary confinement itself is torture. Okay? Because you are in the cell 6x6 or 6x9. You don't have a window. You have 1 hour that you may go out and see the light. And they were saying that that in itself was also torture. So they went on a hunger strike. And hunger strikes have been used in the past to protest a number of things. What's that group? Pussy Riot? The Pussy Riot group over in, you know, they are a rock group, and they were in Russia, and they would use their group to stage protest, okay? And one of their, if you all aren't familiar with them, they're a vocal singing group, okay? One of them, and they were imprisoned, and one of them used hunger strike to stage their protest. And in response to this, thinking of Guantanamo Bay and in California, they were force-fed. Okay? Do you feel that force-feeding is torture? Okay? And after you tell me, I'll give you the spiel on force-feeding. But how do you feel about force-feeding? When somebody now of sound mind says, I'm not eating. This is my choice. This is way that I protest, you know, the conditions or whatever it is. How do you feel about that?
I don't think it's torture if that human being is endangering his or her own life. If I understand fasting, mm-hmm. but protesting with a hunger strike, that's you just endangering your own life. You're going to die if you
but
don't
it's,
eat.
It's your life.
It is your life, but, I mean, if you're in prison, that prison has it has a need to keep you alive.
Okay. All right.
I don't think that people should be force-fed, because it's your right, and if you're of sound body and mind, and you make the decision for a cause that you believe in to not eat, then that's your decision, and if you want to stick to it, then it's fine. It's
okay.
Free country.
I think that I can agree with that. If you're of sound body and mind, that if you want to make the cognitive decision to abstain from eating, and even though you are putting your own life in danger, it's your life. So I think that you should have the ability to know what you want to do with it. So mm-hmm. you're kind of encroaching on their way of life by saying you have to eat this or eat that.
Yeah, well, I will agree with Kevin and Amanda. If it's your life and if you feel as though that you don't want to eat and you are of sound body and mind, then that's your decision. And I feel as though people who probably do these hunger strikes, that's their way of psychologically escaping, like coping with what they're going through right now. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's debatable. Like if you're going on a hunger strike, you're trying to like advocate for something. You're trying to get people to see your view. And by people forcefully feeding you and not giving in to your desires or whatever you're, like, trying to get across, then it's not really helping either situation, so.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you what they're saying. Fundamentally, hunger strikes are a form of speech for prisoners who have no other way to communicate their concerns. Hunger strikes send a real clear message of protest. The international community, including International Red Cross, the World Medical Association, and the United Nations, have recognized the right of prisoners of sound mind to go on a hunger strike. Force feeding has been a violation on the ban of cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment. The World Medical Association holds that it is unethical for a doctor to participate in force feeding. In other words, what I'm saying to you is that force feeding violates international law. Now, what do you think about it?
I still have the same opinion, I think.
So you think we should still, you know, if somebody says, I'm in sound mind, I very much know what I'm doing, and I decide that I'm not going to eat. That is my form of protest.
If you're on the track to killing yourself, I think you should be force-fed. You can still hunger strike. Mm-hmm. You can protest that, and mm-hmm. you will be heard. It is a form of speech, and the ones in charge will hear you. But you shouldn't die for that cause either, because if they never end up listening to anybody on that, it's just a whole bunch of people dying for no good reason. It's a lost cause.
But what's war?
Exactly.
See, that's what I'm saying. See, I mean, because we talk about, you know, some countries, and that's one of the problems that the United States has when they fight these other countries, is that we say we love our country, but a lot of us aren't willing to die for our country or to die for our beliefs. And that's one of the reasons we're having such a difficult time in the battles that are the wars that we are in, because the mentality of those other folks are very different. We love our country to a point, okay? Whereas folks of other ideologies are willing to die for it, okay? So if you believe strongly in something and you're willing to lay your life down, don't you have that right? I mean, I'm just asking you. But when you got to think of it, you got to put it in that context. Do you have that right? Okay? I mean, I think about even, you know, slavery and freedom. Hey, they died for that. They had to die. Many people died. I mean, the right to vote. I mean, we could go on and on and on about all different kinds of protest. And people had to die for it. Comments?
Just jumping the gun. I think that they do have the right to die for it if that is what they want to do. I think that a lot of the benefits that we have, you know, especially in Western culture and American culture, is because somebody died for us to be here. Especially because I'm, you know, African American, I know that a lot of other African Americans died for the cause of, you know, civil war and also just for, you know, integration, mm-hmm. going to school with the same people, being in the IB program, allowing to, you know, learn the same things as I can with Caucasians, you know, Pacific Islanders, people of different nationalities and cultures. So I think that they definitely do have the right to die if that's what they choose.
Okay. Sure.
Go ahead. I totally agree with Amanda. You can look at situations, for example, like suicide bombers and mm-hmm. the terrorist attacks, like in the airplane hitting Twin Towers. They risked their lives. They actually died to
exactly.
inflict pain, if you want to relate it back to terrorism. They actually died to inflict pain on others and actually to kill others in America. So I think when it comes to this situation of justifying if you, like, force feeding, like, if you want to risk your life in order to get your point across, like many terrorists have done before and many suicide bombers have done before, then
and you're not being forced to do it. I mean, you're of sound mind. You're mm-hmm. well aware of the consequences. Exactly. You're well aware of the sacrifices that you're making. Now, and the other point is, it is a violation of the international law now to force feed. Do we have that right? I mean, plus, The procedure, we didn't even talk about that. We're going to take a brief break shortly. But the procedure of force feeding is violent and painful in itself. I mean, it involves restraints. The individual is restrained. And a tube is inserted through their nose all the way down their esophagus into their stomach or intestines. And then whatever it is, food, substance, what is just poured in and it just goes right down, okay? And what they would do is they would keep you restrained, so you could not vomit it back up after about a half an hour or something, you know, so it would be absorbed. That procedure is pretty violent in itself. We're not on television. Nobody can see your faces, but they are making all kinds of faces. I mean, but it is. It's pretty tortuous in itself to do that to someone. So that's the other side of it. I mean, that's another part. We'll come back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. This is great. I love you all. My IB students are my favorite. So we're going to take a break. Welcome to the Ephesus Corner. Panelists weigh in on the rights and wrongs of daily life. Our question is, you're working on a school research project, and it's a team of six students, and the team leader's idea has turned out to be far more complex than you had anticipated. I mean, it's requiring a lot more extensive research. 1 week before the project is due, another team invites you to join their project, and you have the teacher's consent to do it. The other team is much more manageable project. If you leave, however, the team that you're working on, you know, they may indeed get a poor grade. If you stay, then there's still a probable chance that you might get a poor grade, plus you'll have to work like hell. What do you do?
That depends on who's in my first group. I ride or die. These are my best friends. I would not leave them out to dry like that. You always have to, you know, stick through it no matter what. I mean, we all made the choice on the... I mean, I guess we didn't all make the choice. Was it just the group leader that made the...
Well, yeah, I guess you all came to...
We all came to it. If we all came to it, then we have to go through with it.
But then once you get in there, you find out, gosh, this is much more work, and the group leader is just like, you know, cracking the whip, and it's you feel and this grade is important.
I would ask to change it to the other group, and if they said no, then I would go and join the group that I agreed with most. But if they were my friends, I think that they would understand that I would want to join the other group and that they would let me do it.
Okay.
I agree with Adam. I think it's always tricky when you want to do group projects with friends, especially close friends. But if they are your good friends, I think that they're going to understand that at the end of the day, you know, you have to do what you have to do for your grade and, you know, for your education. So I think that they would be understanding enough to let you go.
So I hear you.
They wouldn't agree to changing the topic.
So let me get you would leave.
Yes.
You would leave. You would
stay.
Okay. All right. Continue. Markima.
Okay. Well, this is really hard, but I think that I would...
Well, let me just say this compliments to my technical assistant, Evan Rossi, who came up with today's question.
Well, thank you. But this is... okay. I think also it's tricky when you start working with groups of friends, especially your best friends. And I think that I would be the one to stay and stick it through because you never know. Might switch to the other group, and since it's more manageable, it's less work, you might also get a poor grade on that project. So you never know what's going to happen. So I think I will stick with the group and try to contribute as much as I could to the group itself, even deal with it, try to. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I would do the same thing. Like, group projects are supposed to teach you about teamwork and how to, like, manage your stuff more easily. If you take the easy way out, then you're not really learning anything.
So you would stay.
I would stay.
Okay. One caveat. The team, they aren't particularly your friends. They're just six students, and you all were doing this project with them. So it wouldn't matter.
Mm. If they're not my friends?
I mean, they're classmates.
They're classmates?
Okay. They may not be your best buddies that, you know.
If they're not my best buddies, I'd probably vamoose. I stick it out with the closest of friends, but if you're just another classmate, sorry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe I misled you, because they really aren't your best friends or anything. They're just classmates. There's six students in this group, so.
I'd still leave. I'm sticking to my
leave.
Guns on
mm-hmm.
this.
Okay.
I would as well. I think even though group projects are supposed to teach you about teamwork, I think also on the individual level, you should know your own strengths and you should know when you're being used or abused in this situation on the subject of torture. So I think I would still leave.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it for today's Ethicist Corner. I thank you all. Tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. This hour, I have IB students, and they're always lots of fun to talk with. I welcome them again. I welcome Markema Peterson, Amanda Buya, Adam Wyman, Kevin Ramirez, Krudy Patel. We have been talking about terrorism and dealing with really what is considered torture. We talked about force feeding, and force feeding is not an acceptable practice in the medical community. Nutritional support therapy, and that is only administered when the patient has full consent and they're saying, okay, yeah, you can administer it to me. And it's only administered when it's medically necessary. And for example, things like maybe you have a swallowing disorder, and then they may give you what they call nutritional support therapy. Or maybe you have some type of gastric obstruction. So does being in prison deny one's right to bodily integrity? I mean, if you go to prison, have you just lost everything? You have no control even over that?
I don't think so.
Okay. Elaborate. I want to hear a little bit more.
Well, I just sort of, this might, you know, this is sort of broad, but I just sort of disagree with the entire prison system as a whole, because they need to rehabilitate, not just imprison people. And when you put someone in the box, they're just going to harbor even more bitter sentiments. So I think that overall is just a really broken, ineffective system.
Right, and that's a good point, because prisons are supposed to deter, you know, crimes. And if they were doing their job, we wouldn't be building more and more and more, because those people would not be interested, you know, be deterred from going to prison. So they don't do their job.
Prisons are just crime within crime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yes. Either one.
Okay, well, I totally agree with Adam. I think the prison system is, like, just totally dysfunctional altogether. Mm-hmm. And instead of us,
it's
like...
it's a moneymaker. That's what it's about.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly. All the movies that you watch, you see how, like, they treat prisons, like, people in prison themselves. And you can just see, like, they just basically throw people in a box and tell them, you stay here and serve your time until it's time for you to go. They don't try to rehabilitate them. They don't try to, educate them or teach them things that they've done wrong, or how to get better and how to survive out in their life. Mm-hmm. You can see that they may say they have, like, educational systems and GED, but most of the time those are getting cut or they're not getting funded anymore. And sometimes people fail to realize that it's not – what they're telling you is not always was there. So,
plus, I think you forgot one particular important fact, is that when you go to the prisons – most of the people in the prisons look like you and me and most of the people around this table. So there's something going on there, that the majority of the people in prison are people of color. And the other part is that you have so many people in prison for little petty crimes, drug crimes. You know, the key is if you have money, you know, then you don't go to prison, okay? Unless you're OJ and you're stupid.
Well, bringing it back to force feeding, I think that it's interesting to me seeing it from this perspective of somebody who is for force feeding. They think that it's inhumane for them to let another person die. But to what extent is it humane for you to degrade someone to the point of you're not allowing them to feed themselves if that's not what they want to do? Mm-hmm. You're feeding them as if they were, you know, an animal. I mean, humans are animals. Animals like a dog, you know, your pet that you have to feed, you have to watch them, you have to take care of them, when they are clearly, you know, have the ability to make the decision of, no, I want to do this. Do not feed me. Right. It's not like you're cutting up a piece of cake and feeding it to them. Like you said, you're actually harming them. Yeah. From my definition, that's torture.
It's very painful. I've never had it done, but every account I read of, it sounds like it's very painful.
Yeah, so that in itself is a method of torture to me.
Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, sorry about being naive on the whole process of force feeding.
That's what it's about. We're here to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, something else I was going to say is, you know, force feeding, you mentioned force feeding animals, but that's also an issue because they force feed ducks and geese, particularly, so they can develop foie gras. You know, that pate that is very, very valuable. People love it, okay? It's very exquisite and expensive, and that's a big deal. And so they force feed geese to develop that.
I believe that the torture of animals and just their rights in general is very often overlooked because we perceive them to be less than us when really we should just look at them as living creatures like us. We might be more intelligent, but that doesn't mean that they don't have feelings. And
I don't know if we're really more intelligent. Sometimes I wonder about that. Yeah, Amanda.
I think it's interesting, the debate of ego versus ego, where, you know, man's ego, you know, gets to the better of us to some extent. Because when you think about it, if man were to get wiped off the face of the planet, the Earth would flourish. But if everything else, such as plants or, you know, other bodies that were here before us, were to get wiped off, a ton of our resources would, you know, decimate, and we ourselves would just cease to exist. So I think it's very interesting saying, you know, I'm more intelligent than you, but we also look at that as, you know, very materialistic things, such as a cell phone. I don't know if I can say I'm more intelligent than a lion. A lion doesn't need a cell phone or a car to continue to do what it does and be good at it and to survive and be successful.
That's true. And there are some societies that believed in force feeding their women. It's called garbage. And so because they would want the women to be, the girls to be, they were more marriageable if they were rotund. and healthy. They don't want thin women. They want women who were voluptuous. And those women that were voluptuous were more marriageable. So that's another, just a little sidebar in talking about, you know, force feeding and torture.
I'd really hate to demean someone else's culture in saying this, but that's pretty immoral.
Oh, there's a lot of cultures that were like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, and if you look back at different centuries, you know, the voluptuous woman was the one that was, you know, desired. I mean, it indicated that the man took care of his family. It indicated that he was a good provider. And if he had a little spindly-looking woman, you know, that was, I mean, but that was like, oh, well, you aren't doing a good job. That doesn't mean that everybody was force-fed, the women were force-fed, but I'm just talking about, you know, the presentation.
A fun fact is that, naturalistically speaking, it's human nature to look for the most nutritious and, like, woman that would make the best mate to...
Right.
To bear children, with, to have and I'll get around to children. All of it. You look for the best genetics, whether you want to or not, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting to what, well, American culture in particular wants to tune into. Speaking of, you know, force feeding, especially of women in different cultures, I was watching MTV, I think, a couple of years ago, and they decided to have a documentary of this woman, I think, in Kenya in particular, where within her tribe, she was being force-fed, but they documented it. And I think at the end of the video, they said, but these, you know, crew, although they documented it, they chose not to impose on this certain culture. So I think it depends also, personally, where, what center of the world we're looking at, especially for the war in Syria right now. We're kind of debating on whether we still want to go into that. But then personally, I think that it's ludicrous that we want to help them, but we couldn't help, you know, the civil war in Rwanda when that was going on. We chose to kind of just tune out then. So it's interesting.
Well, the other side that's interesting is we don't have to go across the oceans to help folks. I mean, you can look right here in the United States. There are people who are going without. There are people who don't have running water. There are people who don't have food. So we, you know, we really don't have to go way over there to do it. We can do well right here. Yes, I'm going to go right around the table.
Okay. Martina. Well, on the topic of force feeding, I think that the whole thing about, like, feeding somebody, like, forcing somebody to eat so they won't die is based on kind of, like, our own ego and our own, like, emotions. Like, we can't deal, especially with terrorists in particular, we can't deal with the fact of letting this terrorist die, even though we may want them to die because their potential harm that they may cause to the United States. We can't allow ourselves to kill the man, like, kill the terrorist or a woman terrorist. It doesn't matter. We couldn't allow ourselves to stoop to their level because these terrorists, they want to kill millions of people, and us letting them die and possibly withholding information, possibly withholding information from the whole public that could save millions of lives, it would put karma in our own hearts. Like, we couldn't deal with the fact that we killed this person itself. That's also one aspect, and the fact that us letting them die could cause danger to millions of people's lives.
And let me add to you, and I'll come to you, to Krudy. What about the image? Our image. What does it say about our image?
Yeah.
You know, whether we kill them or we don't kill them, what is this? And I think the image is so important. Okay.
Oh, I have so much to say.
Oh, go right ahead.
Everyone was commenting. But starting with what Markima said, what do you mean by, like, we? Is it us as a nation? Because we have certain people who are trained to, like, torture people and to extract information this way. And while we were talking, I like vaguely remembered my 7th grade English teacher, and we were reading a book on Japan and how we as a nation dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Did we do it, or was it the president's call and the people who actually dropped the bombs pushed the button that released the atomic bomb onto the cities? Was it their fault, or could we take a blame as a nation? So when we're torturing somebody, is it us, or is it...
Well, when I was referring to we, I was thinking of basically the image of the United States altogether. Like, how we can't well, I keep saying we, like, the whole nation.
Chris,
we,
nation. You
yeah,
mean
we can't. We can't bear to let other countries know, oh, okay, they caught a terrorist. Oh, they let him die. Like, they didn't try to, even though he did try to kill citizens of the country, they didn't, like, sustain his life. They didn't keep him alive. Like, they just basically degraded him as a human being and let him die. So mm-hmm. we have an image that we try to uphold altogether.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But it's like we're trying to keep him alive so we can get information.
Yeah.
So I agree with you.
Okay. All right.
I mean, also, just in response to Krudy's question, don't we have some sort of trust for these officials that we elect? That we do give them, you know, the right to say, you have the right to make this call, voicing the opinions that we don't have because we are not in the same position that you are. We elected you to do that. So I think in that sense, we have some sort of responsibility behind the actions that they do because we elected them as officials.
But what about those officials that we may have elected, but they don't take the position or they change their position once they get it, that once they become elected?
Some of them just don't do what they said they were going to do either.
That's in essence. That's what
some
I'm
of
saying.
Them
don't do what they said they're going to do.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, that goes along with us, you know, wanting to trust, wanting to see the good in other people. I think a lot of humans want to do that, and you know, we can't be responsible, I think, for false advertising, in a sense. You know, we thought you were going to do one thing. We believe that you were going to do one thing. We trust that you were going to do one thing, but you did another. So I think then it should be on the individual.
Can't trust politicians, man.
That is the definition of false advertising.
That's true. Any other comments in the last 30 seconds?
I was going to say one last comment on the war aspect and how we help other countries and neglect ourselves. I think that we should help them, but you don't need a machine gun to help people.
Good point. Well, I just want to say thanks to all of you. I truly enjoy talking with you. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Team or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team Podcast, log in wfsu.org.